we're playing slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballew and Carl Nicholson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
Good Saturday morning to you, Austin, Texas. And welcome inside another edition of Playing Through, brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. I'm Bob Ballew.
Good morning. I'm Carl Nicholson. Bob, it's good to see you. And I guess it's as good a time as any for you to confirm or deny. Are you in the running for college football coach of any team that we should know about?
Yes, all of them. And I will take
all of them. Okay.
I will take whichever job they want to give me and take that salary and just be good with life from there. It is what an insane time. You know, it's funny. It was just good to say good morning again, Austin, Texas, because
right.
It feels like it's been about 2 months since we had a show. And I know we've had a couple of them, but so as you guys know that listen to the show, when Texas plays at 11 o'clock, our show is bumped because we have a 4-hour pregame show here on the Horn to lead into Texas football. So our show, obviously, and then the entire Saturday morning lineup just gets kind of bumped for Texas football. Totally understandable. But Texas never plays 7 11 a.m. games in a year. And so this has just been a crazy run of no shows. And it is awesome to be back on the air with Carl. And it's awesome to be back with our listeners and getting to talk a little bit about what's going on in the golf world. I'm telling you, Carl, this is the toughest time of year, but it starts getting a little there's more anticipation, I think, at this time of year, because we know that, you know, Hawaii and then the West Coast swing, all that is just around the corner. And then before we know it, the Masters will be here. The Dell Technologies Match Play will be here. Some big news with Dell Technologies Match Play we'll talk about in a little bit as well. But it's all like right now, it's just this month of December is, I'm going to use a Tiger Woods phrase that I feel like we should all use right now. It's hit and giggle month. Like, if you can get out and play, that's great. But it just kind of feels like a hit and giggle month to me, where it's almost like we've gone through another real tough year. Golf has been our savior for the last 2 years as we've gone through the pandemic and then the fallout of all those kind of things that have gone along with it. And this just feels, Carl, a little bit like a hit and giggle month. Like, let's just go out on the course and have some fun.
I'm totally okay with that, though. I mean, these guys have given us one of the great years, I think, in recent memory in golf. It's just, I think the PGA Tour as a product, the level of play has been extraordinary. I've said it over and over. They've earned this month or this period of time where they can hit and giggle, and it amazes me that they still want to go hit. I mean, it speaks to, like, this week, for example, at the Hero World Challenge, just the respect for Tiger Woods. I think there was a time in Tiger's career where we didn't quite know what the rest of the, and it was an older group then, but it's interesting how much this younger PGA Tour really does have a respect and reverence for Tiger Woods. And some of these guys are real friendship and kinship and a texting relationship and things like that. So I don't know how much Hero World Challenge or if you're a World Challenge guy on this given weekend, but I'm impressed with the field, and I like that they're there. It's sort of another one of those kind of coronation or celebration or exclamation point on the season type events where you're hitting giggle, if you will, but it's a pretty cool bunch of dudes there, you know, playing golf and kind of going out of their way to, you know, play one more event before they shut it down for the holidays.
Yeah. It's, you know, it is kind of funny because you kind of think about the, I think it was Kyle Porter this week said maybe Albany needs to host a major. And I was like, Albany, what is he talking? And I remembered Albany, Bahamas is where they're playing right. This event. And you look at that field and you go, man, Rory and JT and Brooks and Bryson and Finau and Hovland and Morikawa and Spieth and Scheffler and Schauffele. I mean, the list is awesome and kind of the way it should be, right? And to see that play out this weekend will be fun. They play this weekend and they have one more tournament next weekend, the QBE shootout in Naples. 3-day event next weekend, and then they shut it down until they return to Hawaii January 6th. So this is we are coming into the close of the golf season. Not the close of the golf season, because the way the schedule works is, you know, obviously they finish in September and then they just restart the season in October. So it's the month off that they get between December and January for the holidays. And so it's really good. It's really fun for me to be able to see that Hero World Challenge field, because you get to see a lot of really good golfers kind of finishing off their years.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, it's just sort of like a nice, you know, chance to see these guys one more time and think about, you know, look what some of these guys did in the major. But look at how an Abe Answer, for example, or Justin Thomas really kind of, you know, put some more bricks on the wall of the foundation that's going to be, you know, what we think are, if not Hall of Fame level, or at least very outstanding and rewarding golf careers for some of these guys. I mean, yeah, Tony Finau. I mean, just go down the list. And Victor Hovland, I think, you know, had a really good, you know, into his season, and is looking really good coming into 2022. And you just keep going down the list. There's a lot to be excited for 2022. I mean, you talked about pointing to Kapalua as the start of the season, or do you say actually Sony is your touchstone event for kicking off the year since Kapalua's Tournament of Champions. That's the way you look at it?
Yeah. I mean, I just think it's where you get the full field and you get the opportunity to really start over and see how these guys start measuring up. But yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, the Tournament of Champions is another good one because it's a great field. And you know, like I also look at, I think those events are really important sometimes for guys that want to take another step. You know, Harris English won the Century Tournament of Champions last year, and that was a really big vault for him, because he played just some unbelievable golf all season, made the Ryder Cup team, and it was, to me, you know, what else did he win? He won the Travelers. You know, that's a really big deal for some of these guys, that it's going to be a good field, and if you can give yourself a little confidence in January, it can really lead to some bigger things for you throughout the year.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Yeah. Yeah, it's just going to be interesting to see who's got the momentum. You talked about a few names there, and I think, you know, what's Sam Burns going to do to take, you know, we're going to talk 5 years from now that 2021 season where he had these flashes of great play, or are we going to start to see the resume just really start to stack up? You know, same for Scottie Scheffler and guys like Xander Schauffele.
Man, Sam Burns, that's the perfect name, Carl. That's a great pull. That is the perfect name for someone that if they really want to vault into a huge year. So I'm talking about like competing for majors type year.
That's right.
Sam Burns is definitely a guy that I would put in that category.
Yeah, because you want to look at trajectory. I mean, you look at the year Justin Thomas has, maybe not in terms of wins, was it the kind of season that he wanted, but he was right there all the time. And when his game was on, he just looked peerless. He looked as good as anybody. And we said the same thing about, you know, Dustin Johnson and a couple of these other guys on tour, Rory McIlroy. When those guys are on, it just feels like they're just a little bit, not head and shoulders, but maybe just, you know, the top of the hair to the forehead over everybody else. It's just interesting to see how the maturation is going to be. And I think some of these bigger names that we talked about, you know, where are we in Dustin Johnson's cycle? We know he has all the talent in the world. It's just, you know, are there a couple more majors out there to be added to the mantle? Rory McIlroy, we've seen, again, peerless play at different times of different seasons, right? And we've never kind of fit all the, I mean, I don't say never, but it's been a, you know, it's been, you know, which PGA was that? Was the last major that he put together? I mean, it's, we're going on a series of years where he, you think Rory's the kind of guy at this phase of career, at the level he's gotten his body and his mind and everything about his, you know, composite, you know, makeup, he's ready to win a major or two a year. You would think that's just not happening. Now, you know, he's still winning millions of dollars and he's still doing amazing things on the golf course, but, you know, funny, we're at Hero World Challenge week. I mean, the North Star is Tiger Woods. I mean, the unattainable, you know, benchmark is, what was Tiger doing at this age or this phase in his career, you know, at this point, you know, once he had done that, what did he do next? You know, and you know, I think we're more in a time of parity, and a lot of really great teams. Not everybody can win the Super Bowl. Not everybody can win one or two or three or all the majors this year. I don't think we're there. There's no, you know, there's nobody like Tiger that separated himself from everybody else. But I think there's a few guys that can at times of the year. So again, as we turn the page and look to 2022, I think there's a, there's the same list of names, but there's a growing list of names that are like, okay, Colin Morikawa looks like he could win, you know, any week. He's obviously not afraid to win majors. There's really no, you know, scar tissue that that he's got to overcome. You know, he's physically in a good place, obviously, you know, mentally in a good place. Sky seems the limit for a lot of guys, but I think he might be number one. If you say it in terms of, somebody had a graphic, I might have screenshotted it. If you could take their career from here on, who would you take? And I believe it was Morikawa and Rory, and there was a good group of young guys. And it was an interesting question posed. I'll have to see if I can dig it up, but I really felt like that guy was Morikawa. I mean, if you could say, okay, here's house money, who would you take for the next 5 years to be the guy that wins the most, you know, does the most with his time inside the ropes?
Great question.
Who would that be? Yeah, you know, and there were a list of guys. I mean, there were Bryson DeChambeau and Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy, but it was one of those little meme type things, and it was an interesting talking point because, in terms of knocking off majors and doing big things at big moments, I really feel like Colin Morikawa is really kind of at this point elevated himself.
Yeah, and there obviously will be some guys that put themselves in that mix. I think Bryson will be in there. I think Brooks will be in there. But there aren't a lot of guys that you can say for sure you believe will be in that mix. It's really funny. You know, think about this, Carl. In the last 3 years, Rory McIlroy and Justin Thomas have combined – this is the last 3 years, have combined for two top fives in majors.
So that's 12 chances, 24 if you say per guy. Yeah, I mean,
they did not play the Open Championship in 2020 because of COVID.
So we're not going off of that. You're right.
But that's still to think about things like that. And those top finishes were Justin Thomas finished fourth at the Masters in 2020. Rory McIlroy finished fifth at the Masters in 2020. That's it. The other 11 or the other 10 tournaments, neither one of those guys finished in the top five. Last year, Dustin Johnson missed two cuts. He missed the Masters and the PGA Championship cut and then finished 19th at the U.S. Open and 8th at the Open Championship. So it's like you talk about these guys and you say, wow, their games really seem to be at a point where, for Rory and Justin, I think especially, where you would think those guys are going to be the ones that dominate golf. I mean, I'd look to John Rahm. You just start to and golf works this way. And at the end of next year, we'll be talking about the same thing with some other guys that have made their way back in. And maybe it's Rory and Justin, and we're saying those guys are back. But you know, John Rahm has probably been the most consistent with, you know, he had all four majors last year. He finished in the top eight and obviously won the U.S. Open. You just start to turn your attention to some of the other guys, knowing that Justin and Rory and those kind of guys can make a run. But you also realize that as quickly as this game shifts for players, a lot of times you're talking about new guys that are, you know, I didn't feel like we had the drama in some of those majors that we maybe wanted. But, you know, I mean, Jordan Spieth had two top three finishes. He finished third at Masters and second at the Open Championship. So there are a lot of guys that you wouldn't be surprised if they made a run. But I think if we're going to talk about the guys that will be at the top of the leaderboard this year, I think John Rahm has to be on that list. I think Brooks Koepka, if he's healthy, has to be on that list again. I think you put Bryson on that list, and I think Colin Morikawa. I think those are the four guys that you would say. I think all four of those guys have the best shot maybe at winning a major next year.
That's very well said. Yeah. Now, again, we talk about the depth and the parity of the PGA Tour, and anything could happen. But yeah, when you talk about those expectations, when you talk about, you know, I say betting odds in a loose term because I don't bet and I don't look at odds, but those are the guys. Those are your guys,
right,
who you really think should keep the momentum that they built in 2021. I mean, John Rahm had a season for the ages. I mean, you talk about, yeah, the way I just talked about Colin Morikawa, you could just, you know, copy paste that for John Rahm, you know, and because these guys separated themselves, you know,
yeah,
in a way that we really kind of have seen since Tiger Green, in terms of, you know, clutch moments, a lot of pressure, you know, really having to make birdies and you know, acquit themselves, you know, in the final rounds of the majors, you know, and that's right. And that's been the separation. I mean, you know, you mentioned some younger guys. Scottie Scheffler played his way into contention at the Masters. He played his way into contention into some larger events, and I think there's going to be huge things on the horizon for that young man. But you know, it didn't happen. So I mean, it's just, I think your expectation, it's the same way with, you know, that with Tom Herman and all the way back to Mack Brown. It's like, well, you never play a true freshman quarterback. No, you always give him the red shirt. You always sit. I think we do the same thing with PGA Tour players. It's like, oh, yeah. I mean, if he wins the Masters in the first two seasons, it's a total crazy fluke, and you know, you can't measure anything off of that. You just temper expectations until, you know, two or three seasons. I don't know if that's the case anymore on the PGA Tour. I think that's historically the way we've looked at a lot of things, but it's certainly within the realm of possibility. I think Morikawa's shown that. I think when this group of this little, you know, wolf pack of you know, Matthew Wolf and Sung J.M. and Scottie Scheffler and Victor Hovland and, you know, all these guys have emerged. I don't think there's a waiting list anymore. There's no redshirting in the PGA Tour. And I think that's right. Only going to increase when you look at the level of play at the NCAA and amateur golf right now. It's just people come in ready, you know.
No doubt.
It's interesting thing is who gets pushed out? I mean, because the level of play the last, you know, last 3 to 5 years on tour has only just escalated. And the names we talk about, I mean, we talk about Rory McIlroy as one of the older guys. It's Dustin Johnson is maybe, you know, is kind of a great year.
Yeah.
And the guys we're talking about are all, they'll have, you know, a two on the front of their age. I mean, it's just, it's incredible. And I think at some point you look at some really good players getting squeezed out of the PGA Tour just because there's only so many spots. There's only so many opportunities to play. It's interesting. I mean, that'd be the next good John Feinstein book. I mean, here's a guy, you know, a guy with a really good scoring average, a good week-to-week play. And, you know, I have to think it's harder to be inside that bubble for status. I mean, and that's why you're seeing such exemplary play, I think, on the Korn Ferry Tour and down the line.
And in a lot of ways, that's what makes it so impressive when those guys do those kind of things, because you get to see how long they stay at the top. I mean, even a guy like Patrick Reed, to continue with all of the outside noise around him at all times, to continue to play great golf and be in the mix for so many tournaments and just continue to play well, to me, that is as impressive as anything else, because I don't care if everybody hates him or no one hates him or whatever it is on the PGA Tour, right. He is still – I mean, he's a top 30 player in the world. I mean, that's incredible. Like it's just, he's been through a lot this year. And, you know, if you go, you know, I've got the world golf rankings pulled up here and all the guys we're talking about. I mean, Patrick Cantlay is another guy, Victor Hovland, you know, we'll see if Matthew Wolf gets his game back. I'll tell you the one I'm most interested in, and this is probably fair since we are in Austin, but the guy that I think I'm most interested in the 2021 season is Scottie Scheffler. Scottie Scheffler has had a remarkable career to this point. He's been awesome. He was a part of the Ryder Cup team that won it. He was a big reason why. He set the tone on the final day, beating John Rahm. He does all this good stuff. He beat John Rahm at the Dell Match Play last year. Scottie Scheffler has the game. Scottie Scheffler still hasn't won a tournament, not a major. Still hasn't won a tournament. He had a chance in Houston and played really bad on the back nine. Coming down the stretch couldn't close it out. And sometimes that stuff starts getting in your head. Now, maybe I'm wrong on some of that, because I actually asked Chris Beard that question this week. Because Marcus Carr, and I'm going to use it, I won't get too much into basketball, this is a golf show, but Marcus Carr started the year kind of in a shooting slump. I don't even know if we'd call it that. He just wasn't making shots, wasn't scoring the basketball. And his, I think some of his attention was really on defense and was giving out, dishing out assists, stuff like that. So he scores 19 in the game at Gregory Gym Monday, which, by the way, was a phenomenal atmosphere. Really fun to see. I know the volleyball team always has that, but really fun to see basketball get that chance. But so he scores 19, and I asked Chris on Thursday. I said, Chris, is it just good sometimes to see the ball go in? Like, you know, for Marcus, you know, sometimes I know that these guys are good at what they do, but sometimes you just, when you started the year, you're through five games and you haven't scored yet a lot yet. Sometimes you're like, okay, and then he scores 19. And he goes, yeah, I mean, I know what you're saying. He's like, I get what you're saying, but Marcus isn't going to lose confidence. Marcus knows he can score. I know he can score. The other team knows he can score. So that's really not a concern. And sometimes I wonder if as fans, we get in our own heads about what those guys really think. Like, does Scottie Scheffler come – I don't know if he did this or not when he was in Houston. Does he come down the back nine of Houston going – I've got a lead. I got a chance to win the tournament. Like, this is my, you know, maybe it's finally time for me to win one. And then you shoot whatever he shot, 40 or whatever the number was on the back, and you don't win it. Does that continue to get in your head? And then you get on the back nine again in a tournament and you're in the lead and you start thinking about it. Or are these guys so good that they're like, whatever, I don't care. Whatever I did in the past doesn't matter. And there's a different mentality for every person. For Scottie Scheffler, what does that become? What does it turn into? I feel like he is the kind of guy that just shoves all that stuff aside. He's like, I don't really care. I'm just going to go play my game. But when you see that happen, like it did in Houston, it just at least makes you wonder, is that in his head?
And I don't know. I don't know the answer. It does make you wonder that. I think you touched on it. I think these guys are so good at compartmentalizing and realizing that there's nothing about around you played in November that carries over to the first tee of this week. I mean, or tomorrow or the round after that. And I you know, I've read a lot about, you know, on the instruction side of things, and that's usually number one on the mental advice. And it's something Tiger Woods, we haven't talked in depth about Tiger Woods and everything that's happened with him this week, but somebody drew out what he talks about with his son Charlie. Is Tiger got into Charlie's score in junior tournaments. It's like, why is this kid so talented? But he's like 5-6 shots higher in tournaments than he should be. He's like, well, his blow up holes would eat at him. He did a bad shot in the old Mac Brown thing. Don't let the win, you know, beat you one loss beat you twice. Where he would just take a bad attitude to the next shot. And Tiger's like, no, the thing about hitting a bad shot is you just got to will yourself to the next shot being the best shots you've hit all day, the best shot you're, you know, physically, mentally, you know, metaphysically capable of hitting. And that's good advice. I mean, it's what, you know, Jonathan Vegas told me about the first time he played with Tiger. He goes, Tiger just didn't have his swing the first time I was paired with him. I mean, it was an awe to play with him. But I mean, there's a guy that turned around that anybody else would have had, you know, 77 and Tiger shoots 69. Tiger just didn't have it, but he fought. He grinded. He never gave up. He never let one bad shot compound and hit two bad shots in a row. And I think that's where these guys are. I think they know how to compartmentalize and move on. And it's an interesting insight. I mean, Tiger just talking about his son and his family, but it's something we can all, you know, make relatable is that's how you know, that's when six isn't a bad score, but nine can destroy the day. I mean, it's one of those things, you know, it's one of those things we all, and I don't think enough of us have, you know, learned or you know, put into action, because I mean, we all, our blow up holes can be disastrous. And I think as you apply that, you know, to Scottie Scheffler and anybody who, you know, has a disappointing finish or doesn't close out, I don't know. It just seems like guys took it harder back in the old. I mean, I think of guys like Payne Stewart and Scott Hoke, and you know, where Doug Sanders said there isn't an hour that goes by where he doesn't think about missing the 2-footer at the Open Championship. I mean, these guys don't talk like that. I mean, I think maybe Rory to some degree, but I mean, they all talk about being in a good place and being present, which I don't, you know, I know some of those names I mentioned, I don't think that was a phrase back when those guys played. And I think, you know, I like to think it's just different, but I think to your point, you still do wonder how much does it hang over you, especially if you're just, everybody thinks you're good enough to win.
Everybody knows he's good enough to win. It's just what he does to get there. All right. We got to get
which one
break.
Will it be? Yep.
Yeah, we got to take a quick break. Sorry, Carl, I don't mean to cut you off. We got to get to a break, though. And when we come back, we will talk about Tiger Woods. We will continue this conversation a little bit on Scottie Scheffler and get into some more golf. You're listening to Playing Through on the Horn, brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. Don't forget, as we get to Christmas shopping season, and I know Hanukkah is going on, it's a great opportunity to get over to PGA Tour Superstore. If you mention Playing Through on the Horn with Bob Ballou and Carl Mickelson, you'll get $50 off your purchase of $250 or more. And as we get to shopping season and holiday season, it's a great time to get over there, get your fittings, get your clothes, get your gifts for your family and family members that love the game of golf. Head on over to PGA Tour Superstore over at the Arbor Walk and get that done. Stay with us. We're back with more. This is Playing Through on the Horn.
You're playing slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballou and Carl Mickelson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
Another good Saturday morning to you, Austin, Texas. Welcome back inside another edition of Playing. Brought to you by PGA Tour Supersport. He is Carl Mickelson. I'm Bob Ballou. And just good to say those words again as we set up the top of the show. We've missed a lot of shows lately because of Texas football, 11 a.m. kickoffs, and the four-hour pregame show here on the Horn. So it's just good to be back talking golf. We had a good first segment talking about a little bit with the Hero World Challenge. And we finished on an interesting note, Carl. You were talking about Doug Sanders missing that two-footer at the Open Championship. I went down a YouTube rabbit hole this week of golf's worst collapses. And it's just so painful to watch. But I always think it's good to watch those. It's, you know, the Lexi Thompson two-footer, the IK Kim missed the one-footer horseshoe in the hole to win her tournament. Jordan, obviously, at the Masters is one that always comes up. Doug Sanders putt was on there. There are a lot of them. Scott Hoke.
Greg Norman.
Greg Norman, yeah, his collapse. There are a lot of them. I mean, there are a lot. Patty Sheehan had one where she was up. She had an 11-shot lead on Saturday at the U.S. Open, at the U.S. Women's Open, and did not finish. She went 75-76 on the weekend. She said she felt terrible on Sunday, tried to play through it, lost by a shot, crying in the post-game interview. That stuff's hard to watch, but it is. And I always joke about this, Carl. I think we've talked about this before with Rory McIlroy four-putting from 8 feet or whatever when those things happen. It's just a good reminder that as an amateur, you're just going to miss putts sometimes. It's just the reality of life. You're going to miss one footers. You're going to miss two footers. You're going to miss three footers. You're going to four putt from 8 feet. Those things happen. They happen to the best in the world. They're going to happen to you. I saw somebody that said Tiger Woods hit, I can't remember what percentage of greens he hit or has hit throughout his career, but it's a number that, like, you'd be like, okay, well, I mean, that doesn't seem great. Maybe it's half or whatever the number is, how many greens he's hit. Every amateur thinks they should hit every green that they play every time they play golf. It's like sometimes you just got to remember, hey, if I miss a green, just get up and down or whatever it is. And I think it's the fun part of golf, but it's the very difficult part of the game as well, is sometimes your putting's just going to be off. You're just going to have bad days. That doesn't mean – I don't mean it like don't get mad about it or whatever, but just try to remember that the best in the world do this. This is what golf is, and sometimes it's just going to happen to you.
No, I think you just have to chin up for golf's ironies. I mean, my last round, I missed two fairways, which for me is huge progress. But it wasn't an atrocious putting round. I feel like the speed was there, but I misread everything. So numbers wise, it just was not a good putting round. So it was great off the tee, a little shaky in between. So I mean, there's no guarantees. I mean, so is it guaranteed that I'm going to have a great driving round the next time? And you know, whatever I work on is going to incrementally improve. I mean, I think it's always good to psych ourselves up. And Christina Kim had a good point. What was it? Unrealistic hubris or something. There's something you have to take, you know, to the game where it's just, you have to expect you're going to hit your best shot. I mean, I know a lot of people say on par threes, well, hit one club up because you're probably going to miss it. I mean, that's good advice for amateurs in general. But I think sometimes it's better advice to say, assume you're able to split the fairway on that type par four. Assume that you are going to hit it over the water to the quadrant or the green that you want to. That, yeah, the lip's 12 feet high on the bunker, but you know, plan a shot and execute it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's all you can do.
I think confidence goes a long way in any sport, right? I mean, you brought out the basketball analogy in shooting through a slump. I mean, I think if you really care about this the way we all do, the way it drives us all crazy, is you have to have a little bit of that. I don't think pessimism is the way forward. I mean, or you know, there's an acceptance. We're all not great athletes. We're all not going to smash it like Rory or Bryson DeChambeau. But I think there's an acceptance of what our talents are. But I think we've all seen ourselves do pretty cool and incredible things with a golf club in our hands too. So I think there's always that aspirational. I have to look up the exact terminology that Kim used because I thought it was great. It was like delusional hope or something. You know, something. You know, ironic and a little bit self-deprecating, but I kind of buy into that you kind of have to believe that, you know, you are able to pull off great shots over and again. And what you said, just pick yourself up and what Tiger said, you make the, you know, if you had a horrible shot, make the next one the best shot you've hit all day and go from there.
I'm going to use the phrase that I use for Case McCoy. And I always feel like, I actually want to have this conversation with Case one day because it's not a knock on him. It's not a, like, I'm not taking shots at Case McCoy when I say this, because I just think, I thought Case did some unbelievable things at Texas that people don't give him enough credit for, because he wasn't Peyton Manning, because he wasn't Vince Young, because he wasn't Colt. He wasn't that good at the college game. He was really good at times for Texas. He did some unbelievable things. He won some huge games. Obviously, the run against A&M is the one that a lot of people will go back to. But
that's a Texas legend. I mean, yeah, people are still talking about that run, and obviously the successful field goal to cap that game off. But I mean, that's Texas legend. I mean, you're using Case McCoy in the words of with Noble Doss and Ricky Williams. I mean, yeah, the guys that have done legendary things that their kids will talk about and grandkids.
He did. He did legendary things that his kids will talk about, that Texas fans forget and should remember how good Case McCoy was at times. But anyway, the phrase that I've always used for him was he had irrational confidence.
Right.
Like, his confidence was so much better or so much greater than what his actual skill level was, which I thought brought his skill level up even higher. Right. And that's not – I feel like when you say those words, irrational confidence, it's a knock. And I'm not trying – that's not what I mean by that. It's a trait that I think – and bringing it back to golf, it's a trait that I wish we could all have on the golf course was, you know, I'm in between 55 trees and there's only one way through to get toward the green. Otherwise, I can just chip out. I've got the irrational confidence that I'm going to put this through those 55 trees and not hit one of them. And then just – and then I do it. And that's what I always felt like a lot of times with Case McCoy. It was like he had the irrational confidence of, I'm going to go win this game. And then he would go win it. And you're like, man, you're not – I'm trying to come up with like the great college quarterbacks of the last years. Like, you're not Tim Tebow. You're not even, you know, Vince or all these Heisman, you know, Kyler Murray and all these guys. Like, Case wasn't that talented, but he certainly had – brought some unbelievable moments to Texas and was a really good quarterback. And I think people never gave him enough credit for how good he was. Anyway, I'm going off on a tangent, but that's the words I would use would be irrational confidence of it's a real opportunity when you're on the green sometimes to be like, I am going to make this putt. And in your, like, you would normally be like, there's no chance I'm going to make this putt, but like, have that irrational confidence and give yourself a chance to make it.
I think so. I think that's tremendous advice. I mean, I think it's a tremendous mindset to take with you going forward, because, you know, your next shot could be the best shot you hit all day. It could be, you know, it could be an epic, one of the great ones of your life. I mean, you just got to keep grinding, keep digging in there. Yeah.
I always wondered if people didn't give Case enough credit because his brother was so good. And it was almost like, well, you're not as good as your brother. Well, okay, who in the college game was? There aren't many quarterbacks that were as good and put up the numbers that Colt McCoy ever put up. So anyway, I'm off my tangent. I do want to get into this though. Getting off the from irrational confidence to the most rational confidence anybody's ever had with Tiger Woods.
Right?
Did you get to listen to his press conference this week? What did you think? And what did you kind of make of the way he was responding to questions at the Hero World Challenge this week? First time that he's talked, obviously he had the Golf Digest interview the day before, but just his first press conference in front of everyone since his accident back in February.
Well, it's sort of a flood of thoughts. I think the biggest one is still kind of the most obvious that maybe moved on from him. You know, heard him speak at length in Santa Golf Club, and he's walking. Is just the amazing fact he's even physically there. You know, I mean, you can't think about, you know, this week's press conference without thinking about, you know, a year ago and that car flipped over and that, you know, how far it flew and just the improbable physics of him even being here to talk about any of this, to talk about any future in the game, whether it's, you know, casual or professional or major. So, yeah, I mean, you do start to have those kind of Ben Hogan type feelings where he even kind of invoked Mr. Hogan, as he said about, you know, what it's just not going to be the same physically. If he can play, I don't think he knows yet. I think that was kind of clear to what degree he can compete. It doesn't feel like, you know, right now that's very much walking long, hilly golf courses. And he mentioned having lost some length, you know, some distance, you know, tee to green. So, yeah, I mean, one, it's good to see him because Tiger's a legendary figure. You know, that he's able to swing, that he, you know, he's built himself back in a way that people didn't know. I mean, there's nothing but on back of the stacks. So it does your heart good. But then you sort of settle into, you know, being on the press side of it for so long. At times it kind of did feel like a Tiger Woods press conference because it was guarded. There was some stuff you just weren't going to get. The guys took swings for and kind of knew they were going to miss, but they had to ask. They had to do their jobs. And, you know, we didn't get a lot of details on his emotions or his interpretation of you know, his rehab or even the facts of the accident itself. So kind of moved on to, you know, some tongue-in-cheek, self-deprecating things about the state of his game and the state of his physical health. But, you know, it's kind of new Tiger, kind of old Tiger is kind of what I felt like out of there. Yeah.
I took a couple things from it. I think the first thing that I took was the unbelievable idea that amputation of his leg was an option.
Right.
When he made that comment, and somebody asked him that, and he said, yes, it was absolutely on the table. I think when we have our heroes in the sports world, or whatever word you want to use, our idols in the sports world, we just think they're invincible. And we, you know, you think about Kobe Bryant, every time this is going to come up for the rest of my life, I will think about him when things like this happen, when there's an accident or there's something like that, because he was, you know, as good a basketball player as just about anyone that's ever played the game.
Right.
And when that stuff happens, I think we all, I still can't believe that's a real thing. Like, I still can't believe, you know, Kobe's gone. I think about Tiger Woods in that same mold of even just the amputation of his leg is something that you can't wrap your head around. Tiger laying in a hospital bed talking about amputating his leg. Everybody else is, I mean, the day of the accident, we've talked about this, Carl. We talked about it. Go back to our shows in February when we had this conversation. The day of the accident, there were people on the air talking about when he might return. Well, what's his golf game going to look like when he returns? And I'm like, guys, you've got to be kidding. No,
I don't think anybody was looking at it rationally if that's how they were looking at it, because it was dire. And I think, you know, whatever's underneath that wrap of that leg, I'm sure is still pretty. I'm sure it's a miracle of science and, you know, unfathomable luck too and good fortune. And a lot of good doctors clearly. No, but I mean, I hesitate to call it selfish. I don't know. That is kind of, I mean, whether you verbalize it or not,
that's where your mind goes. There.
It's where mind goes. It's where your mind goes for sure, because that's all. That's what we know Tiger as. I mean, even in the lead up, this follow on social media, this scratch that has access to all the PGA Tour's archives, them showing Tiger playing the 18th at this Albany club, where he just sort of balloons a driver dead straight because he needs to take some off of it. And it just carries as high as a gap wedge, you know, sand wedge, stops on the green, takes the number of skips that he needs, and then goes and makes an eagle putt. I mean, that's what we want Tiger to be. I mean, in our minds, we want Tiger to be the guy hitting the boomerang shot on 16 at Augusta to go in, because of course it's going to go in. It's Tiger. Of course it's going to go in. we can't, you know, it was just sort of, I mean, we're not ready to see Parkinson's Ali out of Tiger. It's just, our brains can't do that. They can't go there. Especially because in 2019, the guy won the Masters. The guy beat everybody in the field and won the biggest golf tournament in the world. We're only human. Our brains are only, you know, and our hearts or whatever it is are only so, only have such capacity. And it's hard. I mean, I pulled out for whatever reason, an editorial I wrote when Tiger was, remember Tiger had the chip yips in 2012 when he was coming back from a lower back thing. And we didn't know if he was going to get his feel or back, and he's
right,
you know, shooting scores towards 80 in professional tournaments. And it just, and he goes in my mind, and that was nearly 10 years ago. I'm like, our minds just aren't ready. We're just not ready to think this is a ceremonial player or a guy where we talk about his achievements in the past. And, you know, a lot's unfolded since then, you know, and then, you know, he looks at, you know, that 2019 Masters as his Everest, as his, you know, kind of his encore, as his swan song in terms of what he was able to do. And, you know, it's unfortunate that the accident happened, and maybe he's robbed and we're robbed of whatever he could have done, you know, on top of that. But he was already coming off another back surgery. It would have been, like he said, it would have been a mountain climb as he related it to. And we don't know. We don't know what we've got, would have gotten, you know, but we're you know, the thing is, he's alive, and he can look at his legacy or what his contributions, you know, will be, you know, to golf moving forward. It seems like he's got an eye on, you know, not disappearing. So I think that's the big thing. I think he wants to be a part of this game. He talked about the field at the Hero, how this involvement with charity and his, you know, his vision for giving back has inspired other players. I think he mentioned a number, you know, nearly a dozen guys who started their own foundations, you know, based on, you know, having picked his brain and, you know, how do they get started and how do they give back? So we don't equate Tiger Woods with an Arnold Palmer type benevolent, you know, best friend, grandfather, mentor type figure, you know, ambassador of the game. But I mean, he is. I mean, he's done more for the game than any figure in modern times, you know, whether we love his personality or agree with, you know, how much he gives us from time to time. The fact remains is that he, you know, moved the needle farther than it's ever been moved.
All right, we're going to finish up this conversation when we come back. A little more on Tiger Woods when we return. This is Playing Through on the Horn, brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore.
You're playing slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballew and Carl Nicholson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
All right, final segment of Playing Through on the Horn, back to the PGA Tour Superstore. He is Carl Nicholson. I'm Bob Ballew. And just a couple more thoughts on Tiger Woods to wrap up our show. You know, you kind of mentioned it there, Carl, right at the end of the segment. The other big point I wanted to make with Tiger was he even made the point that he doesn't know if he'll want to climb Mount Everest again. You know, you mentioned that he said the Masters in 2019 was his Mount Everest. He doesn't even know if he wants to come back to that. He doesn't know if he wants to push himself back to the limits that he knows it takes to be that good. And that's okay. And as disappointing as whatever word you want to use as it is, for the average golfer or for the huge golf fan that's always loved Tiger Woods, we need to come to the realization that it's okay that Tiger Woods is going to, I started the show with this, let's finish it with it as well, hit and giggle for a lot of the remainder of his PGA Tour career. Now, that's not to say he won't necessarily put in the work to try to do it. I think he does want to play in a few events a year. I'm sure he'll want to play in the Masters until he gets to the point that he realizes he can't compete, that he's just going there and shooting 78, 79 and then leaving. I don't think he wants to do that. So if he can get himself back into a position where he can shoot, you know, 70, 68 and make the weekend and try to make a run at something, maybe. But this is never, ever, and I think this is the hard thing to wrap your head around. This is never, ever going to be the Tiger Woods, even the one we saw in 2019, 2018 and 2019 right, at the Tour Championship, at Bellerive, at the Masters, doing everything he did. I'm not saying it's 100% this is the case, because it's Tiger Woods and I would put nothing past him. But the reality of the situation is He will probably never, ever do that again, in part because he doesn't want to do it again, because it's so hard on your body after five knee surgeries, five back surgeries, and now this accident. It is so hard to get back to that point. I think that's always going to be the hardest thing for us to wrap our heads around, but it's the reality a lot of us need to face, is that he probably won't come here. You know, 5 days of golf and eight rounds is right. A lot of golf. He probably will not come back to Austin. I hope he does, but there's a really good chance we only get to see him once here. And that was with, you know, the incredible Tiger Rory match. But those are the things I think that kind of flowed through my head as we talked about Tiger.
Yeah. There was always going to be a point where we needed to be okay with less Tiger. And I don't think we want to see the Wizards uniform Tiger, the guy going right. out and trying to play, but like you said, shooting 78, 79, 77. I don't think we want to see that. I think 2019 capped it off. I think he certainly has the right to play in a lot more Masters, and we'll just see. And again, the temptation is to say, Bob, do you think he's going to be back at the 2022 Masters? What's the realistic return date? We're not doctors. We're just hopeful 2022 fans.
Masters, at this, 2023. You know. No. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think that's realistic at all. I don't.
I think you're right.
I think maybe the Open Championship, because he loves St. Andrews so much. It could be the last time he gets to play St. Andrews in an Open Championship. I think that could be the one we see him return, but even that is a stretch. That's 7 months away, and even that's hard to think about. So
we just don't know, but it would be extraordinary. You think of the magic of the birthplace of golf, St. Andrews, and what a moment that would be if we do get to see that.
Yeah, it'd be awesome. Well, Carl, this is always fun. A couple more shows before Christmas. Really look forward to talking more golf and kind of getting a feel for what's going to happen in 2022. I want to finish off this year by setting our goals. We want to bring those in before we get off the air. So we'll do that as well. But we're so grateful to you guys for listening. We always love talking golf with you guys. And Carl, look forward to doing it again next week.
It's still good to be back. It's going to be even better next week. So look forward to it, Bob.
No doubt. All right. He is Carl Mickelson. I'm Bob Ballew. This is Playing Through on the Horn, brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. Go out and make a bunch of birdies, everyone.